Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Wessex Safety Hour, hosted by Tracy Capstick. My name is Deborah, and I'm your event manager. During the presentation, your lines remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key *0 on your phone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd just like to advise all parties that the conference is being recorded, and now I'd like to hand over to Tracy. Thank you, Tracy. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Deborah. Good afternoon to you. Tracy Capstick, Workforce Safety Advisor for this lovely route. And I am accompanied today by Chris Perkins, who is the head of change control for our route.
Good afternoon,
everyone. So, a brief outline of what today's safety hour is about. We have hijacked Nigel Wheeler's session to talk about planning and delivery of safe work. So it is back again in a slightly different form. So what I propose to do is Chris, being the senior executive sponsor of the programme on Wessex, is going to give us a brief overview of what it is, what is happening, and timescales. And inside that, I will talk about the changes to the standard NRL2 OHS 015, which is the standard by which we put people to work. So if you have any burning questions, we will come back to you later on in the questions, and please ask them, bearing in mind interesting topic, but we've only got an hour. So without further ado, Mr. Perkins, kindly explain where we are with planning and delivery of safe work today.
Again, my pleasure, Tracy. So as you'll be aware, PDSW was launched in 2014 as a national programme, and we saw quite a significant impact on the route during 2014 and 15, most notably through the delivery of safe work leaders training, which many of you will have attended. As Tracy said, PDSW is back. It's in a significantly different form, though. It's also a very high priority. Anybody of you who sort of read Connect recently will appreciate that we have five must wins, which are network rail-wide activities which must be committed and indeed completed in order for us to be successful. So PDSW is in a different format, but most notably a very, very important thing for us to deliver. The model that's being adopted is slightly different to that which was first tried. Before, essentially, it was a national programme that was pushed to the route, and we had to comply with the timelines and the activities. Essentially, after the stalling of the trial in the East Midlands area, a review of the programme took place, and this new direction was identified. What is going to happen is that the route is going to be responsible for its delivery. So I, as the senior responsible, only as Tracy has mentioned, are sort of accountable for this delivery within Wessex Route. We also need to tie in very closely with our supply chain, so how IP deliver it, and how we deliver across maintenance through works delivery and through our own internal supply chain is really important. It needs to be consistent, and it needs to be done in a timely fashion. Those of you who perhaps are new to PDSW will ask yourself, what's the outcome? Why are we doing this? And in essence, what we're seeking to achieve is clear accountability for the carrying out of work on our network. The differences are that this introduces a term which will become very familiar to you, and that of a single controlling mind, namely that is one person who is responsible for the safety of the job itself, but also for the task and the operational safety. So that's the outcome, that's what we're seeking to achieve. A little bit of the background, just to fill in the gaps. Last time we sought to roll out all components at the same time. So we had a new standard, which was backed up by a new process for delivering work. We also had what we call schematics, which were being delivered through a system called Procient. And then, as I've mentioned, we had the Safe Work Leader training. The new approach essentially is to deliver those elements, but in a different and unconnected sequence. So the very first piece of work, which Tracy and I will go into in a moment, is all about the delivery of an updated standard 019, which will be the first phase. It's completely delinked from the technical aspects. That actually is now going to be provided by the Orbis program, and it's going to be based on our Ridge infrastructure network model. That is for a later phase of the program, about which we don't even have firm dates yet. So this initial phase is all about the introduction of a new version of 019, which essentially is short, clear, and simple, and is essentially based on the SALPS pack, but it has a task risk assessment added, and it also takes into account the site risk elements. So it's the same but different, and the differences are important. Where we are at the moment is we've had a series of national meetings, which Tracy and I have been to. The next steps are for us, as we've already kicked off this morning, is for the first phase of a stakeholder review, where we brought in key people from across the region to look at the draft 019 and to provide really detailed feedback for the national team. That's going to be, our feedback is then going to be taken in, and over the course of essentially November, the standard is going to be completed. The publishing of the standards is due to take place on the 9th of December. Thereafter, my role in this is essentially to deliver a local Wessex plan for implementation. And what we will be doing between January and April of 2017 is having a detailed implementation plan, which will include briefings, such as stand-down briefings, local training as required, with the intention of going live at the start of April 2017. That timeline will see us being required to comply with the new standard from the 1st of July 2017. So in essence, we have sufficient time to do it properly, but it is quite an interesting and compelling timeline. Therefore, what is different about PDSW this time around? I'm going to bring in Tracy back into the conversation and just talk through some of the things which are different about this version of PDSW as opposed to the previous rollout. So Tracy, we're very familiar with the SALPS pack, but one of the key differences with PDSW this time is that we have what we call a safe work pack. Can you just describe what the key elements of that is?
Right. So Safe Work Pack, and this is one of the elements described in the new 019. So a Safe Work Pack is the SALPS pack as we know. So it is about the information for protection. It also has a need for a whole load of things, including the risks and the controls associated with those risks, of the activity, and then information about particular site risks as well. So it's kind of a bit of a trilogy now. Protection, task risks, and by virtue of identifying the risks, you identify the controls and location-specific risks and controls. So it's, you know, it's a three-pronged effect. That wraps up into a safe work pack. So that's the primary driver. And there is no additional technology or processing system sitting behind this.
Thank you very much indeed. I think it's important to say that there are sort of five elements to the program. What we're introducing at the moment essentially are the first three, which is the single controlling mind. It's the involvement of the responsible person in planning, and it's also the task risk that Tracy's just outlined. The two elements that are not covered in this phase are the schematics, and then also there's the e-permit technology, which is a way off to the right and it isn't affecting us at this time. So I mentioned at the outset, Tracy, the single controlling mind.
Yeah.
We have a particular role which is called the person in charge, which is an important feature.
Yeah. So you need to forget everything you ever knew about safe work leaders in the direct staff. This standard talks about single controlling mind as person in charge, and that is the person in charge during the planning stage and effectively will be the person in charge at delivery of work. And they are engaging with planners, nominated by a responsible manager, involved in planning and the risk mitigation, creation of those three elements of the pack with the planner, and ultimately verifies that everything is fine and dandy and stands there on the night of the race with his safe work pack in his hand. All the information you ever need to know about delivering work safely. Apologies. So he has responsibilities. They are outlined in the standard. And he is accountable for making sure work is delivered safely. It's quite simple.
Yes, that's one of the key elements. So this individual must be a COS, but they don't have to be a COS on the day of the activity.
Yeah, that's right.
And what's key about this is that the person in charge is a capability, but it's not a competence per se. It sounds hopefully familiar to you, because as I understand it, the previous experience that the Roots had in terms of the on-site supervisor is something which is not unfamiliar to the team, and it's very much consistent with that.
Yeah, many years ago we took an awful lot of people, actually, Steve Hooker and I, to Chelsea and Southampton, and explained to people who were team leaders or leaders of men on site that they did have this level of responsibility for safety anyway. So to some of us who are a bit long in the tooth, it will not be a shock to understand that you as an on-site supervisor have got certain responsibilities.
So one of the key roles about the person in charge is, well, essentially what hasn't changed is that the COS role and the ES functions essentially remain the same. But the thing that the person in charge is required to do is essentially assume responsibility for ensuring that those functions are discharged correctly.
Yeah, so the person in charge does not have to be a COS, but has the COS competence when looking at the protection required for the work. And this and the ES remains the ES, and doing ES duties rulebook styly, not adopting any additional responsibilities for doing the work under that role.
We mentioned a few things which are additional. One key element is about validation. So that's making sure that we verify that the pack has essentially been used correctly.
Yeah, so today a COS will verify the protection element, the thanks element of the correspondence when he goes out to work. And that's to be done no later than the shift in advance. Under the new standard, the verification will take place, but it will be not just of the protection arrangements, the SANC stuff. It will be verification of the task and the site risks and mitigation measures as well. So that will be done, but the timeline is more about the authorization by the responsible manager, a shift in advance. So that final signature isn't verification by the COS, it is authorization by the responsible manager. So there's two elements there, really. So that verification is the whole pack, not just the protection. And that is not the last signature. The last signature is the responsible manager authorising authority, a shift in advance.
Brilliant.
Under normal circumstances.
And I understand that one of the benefits of the Safe Work Pack is that it eliminates the opportunity of having multiple packs for the same piece of work.
Yeah, so back to Neil Eakins again. Right, so if Neil Eakins, bless him, was doing a rail job, and Neil Eakins had some S&T, some P-Way, some off-track, some welders, would you need a safe work pack for all those activities? And the answer is no. Nearly can create a pack with a planner and go to experts in any one of those fields to work out what the risks are, what the mitigations are for the work activity, check out the location, and he, as the person in charge, will hold safe work pack and will give elements of it to those distinct people to do their work activity. So there is not going to be millions of safe work packs created on a minor level. The key element is that person in charge knows what the protection is and is happy with it. He knows what the task activities and the risks associated are. He has sought advice where he needs to, and he knows the location and the risks associated with that. So it seems quite simple to me, but then, you know, I've had to get my head around a lot in the last few years. So there is not to be an assumption that there's this great beastie. If you're doing a big job, it can be combined.
And I understand that as part of the standard review, we're looking at the hierarchy and what are the likely outcomes of that.
Right, so the two hierarchies in this standard, one is in terms of protection. So we're still trying to get away from red and green zone, and there are eight elements of protection. And instead of red and green, they're referred to as protection or warning. So if we are not protected from drains, obviously protection, but if you are in an environment formerly known as red zone with warning systems, that is now called warning. So it is in the standard, likely to be reviewed when more technology comes on board, SatWAS and Lewis and all those other good things, to minimise the amount of time we are reliant on men waving flags in the infrastructure. So slight changes to the hierarchy, more to do with name at the moment, but with the potential to make it more techno-favourable later on.
Okay, so that I think has given us an overview of the new PDSW project. When we're going to open up the lines now for hopefully a significant number of questions to probe us on. The key things that I'd just like to highlight is that we're currently going through the review of the standard process involving a significant number of people across the routes. You'll doubtless be wondering what this means for you. In essence, the standard will be published at the beginning of December, as I've mentioned, and then we'll also at that stage have a local implementation plan. So that will enable you to see how it's going to impact you specifically, and also how it's going to be consistent with what our supply chain and IP are doing. But the significant period of change for us will be from January through to April, whereby we need to implement the new standard from April going forward, and we need to be compliant with it by July. Okay, Deborah, I think we're ready to open up the lines and to ask any questions.
Lovely, thank you, Chris. So ladies and gentlemen, should you wish to ask any questions, it's simply *1, record your name and press the hash key. If you decide to withdraw your question, key *2. All questions are answered in the order received and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines remain on listen only. So *1, record your name and press the hash key. Thank you.
Come on, people, don't be shy.
So everyone, questions, comments, anything, it's *1, record your name and press the hash key. Thank you. All quiet at the moment, sorry, guys.
Oh, I'm surprised. I thought there might get a few questions on this one.
Coming through now, we've got three just still very, very quickly. Thank you, everyone. So this first call comes from the line of?
Brian Scott.
Thank you, Brian. You're live in the call.
Tracy, how you doing?
Mr. Bean Counter, how are you?
I have a bean counter question for you.
Oh, excellent.
Are there any training or financial implications to what you've just outlined?
Right, okay. There is no training coming out from the centre to create competencies at the moment. In terms of the finances, I think there will be some issues created, and that is about workload and whether we have sufficient resources in our planning fraternity to support some of these changes. Those are my main concerns.
Yeah, Brian, the programme director must be fed up with me badgering away about the funding issue. She has mentioned that the board, making this a must-win, have committed to resourcing it properly. But we haven't spoken about pounds, shillings, and pence. And my assumption is it won't cost the bridge anything. But we have been here before.
That was a sort of mixed answer. There's Tracy saying yes, it will cost more, and you saying that it won't cost any more.
I think we're talking about two slightly different things. So Tracy's talking about the long-term OPEX consequence, and yeah. I'm talking about the implementation cost.
All right, okay. So the long-term OPEX one, then, I take it as this is a must-win item that somebody somewhere is going to turn around and say, here's some extra money, and not make the same amount of money go the same distance.
What we must recognise is that there's an awful lot of work going on in the planning area, and our aim is to ensure that PDSW is implemented in a consistent way with that work.
Okay.
So I don't think it's a new question. We just need to make sure it's a combined question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for that. And the next question comes from the line of?
Andy Malcolm, IMDM, Wessex Centre.
Thank you. Are you live in the call?
Good afternoon, Mr. Malcolm.
Hello. Yeah, so it's just, I was going to ask what Brian asked, but I'll phrase it slightly differently. So what it was around was, so we've spent a number of, you know, the best part of 12 months, you know, cascading, you know, information, training, et cetera, for Safe Work Leader to both the guys and girls on the front line and also, like, section planners and section managers in the office. With this being very much a relaunch of sort of plan and delivery of Safe Work, but in a different format, Have we got an indication of what that call communication and that training, you know, what any form of training, briefings, etc. is going to look like if we're going to be going down the road of super users, and do we have a bit of a plan in terms of what that looks like? Because we've spent a long period of time pre-training people on something that we're now not doing, and for perfectly valid reasons. However, we're now taking a different approach. I appreciate we're not going to retrain, but we're going to have to do something. I just wondered if we had any idea of what that something was.
Yeah, the key thing here, Andy, really, is that the more in-depth detail is around about the task and activity risks. So we don't assume, because the schematics are no longer part of what's being rolled out, we don't foresee anything remotely on the same scale in terms of the training bill. But what we must ensure ourselves is, if we're going to follow the process well, and for our safe work packs to be of good quality and something which supports our safety, we need to have a degree of consistency. So I think that the one area where we may have to do some competency development as opposed to training is in the conduct of the task and the activity risk assessments.
It wasn't so much the sort of bill element. It was more around, you know, when we originally launched 0 or 9 a number of years ago, that wasn't done as, you know, as training for everyone that was currently, you know, incumbent in roles. But there was a whole series of, you know, super users or gold users, I think they were called, and workshops and briefings for managers and planners. So everyone was clear on kind of what was required and what was expected.
Yes.
Which is key if we're going to implement this and really make a change, that everyone's, you know, compliant to it. And with that, people need to understand it. And I just wondered what the sort of the view was in terms of what that plan looked like.
In essence, essentially the experts in this, and there are a significant number around from the previous rollout, are responsible for defining what the training needs are. And then working out the best way of delivering that. At the moment, without having done that in-depth analysis, we foresee it as being a combination of things like the stand-down briefings. There will be team-level briefings on the new standard and the changes that it's going to introduce. But at this stage, I mean, to be honest, it's too early to say precisely what that training program will look like.
Okay, thank you. Does that answer that one?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you. We've got two more waiting. So the next one, thank you, is from the line of?
Karen Delf.
Thank you, Karen. You're live in the call.
Ah, Ms. Delf, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good.
I thought I'd put my two panics in, Tracy. So,
Oh, please do.
I don't really have that much to do with the subs, but I do know how the work skill routines work. And I know that some of the supervisors are on permanent nights who will be in charge of the site, whilst others during the day will obviously help put these packs together. I know you gave Neil Eakins as an example, but he might be able, you know, he will know the area, he'll know the risks, but there's no way you get him out on a Saturday night. So it's just what support are these guys going to have? I mean, are these guys going to have to come off their nights to be able to do these packs? And then go back on to actually be in charge of the work. And there are some team leaders as well that will be in charge of the works as well. So you might not necessarily be cosses, but will be the leaders.
Right, okay, yeah.
Do you quite understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, no, I understand what you're trying to say. So at the moment we're looking at the requirements of 019 to cover the high-level principles, I suppose, of what each role should do. And there's two things in that. One is, if Neil Eakins was working permanent nights and was going to do those work activities, but he had Roger Stevens working on days with the same competencies to arrange for all the information to be gathered and signed off, ready to go for Neil to deliver. That is possible under the standard, provided that Neil reaches all the documents, accepts everything that is in there in order to deliver it at the time.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So,
I'll get that.
When the standard talks about the person in charge, it does not assume that it has to be the person in charge all the way through under pain of death.
Right. Okay. Super.
And the second thing I probably need to point out is this is a level 2 standard. Now, when you look at a level 2 standard, it is written for the whole of the industry. And normally, as in with working at heights, there was a level 2 standard, put out some principles and some basic instructions, but level 3 standards were written to help what was then maintenance deliver their work activities. So it might well be, when we finish this initial review of the level 2, that the routes choose to write a level 3 set of instructions on how this standard will work inside the level 2 standard. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. Thanks, Tracy.
It's a really good question, Karen, and essentially, as Tracy just alluded to, the level 3 tells us what to do.
Yeah.
The level 2 tells us what to do. Level 3 really is all about how we do it. And some of the points you just raised have come out of the workshop that Tracy and I have just been in. So it's a really good question.
Thank you
for that. And there is one further one, but caller, your line might have been on mute when you were recording the name. So if you know you have keyed *1, perhaps if you speak now, if you unmute the line your end, we should hear who this is.
Good afternoon, Tracy. It's Dave Empson at Wimbledon.
Thank you.
Ah, Mr. Empson, how are you? Speak up, we can't hear you.
Thank you. First question regarding training, I believe, has been answered. The bit that's also concerning me at this stage is it's going to be down to the managers to brief this out again. Are we going to have some sensible time to brief this out? Because this is quite a serious change to our industry. It's not going to be like roll it out in a week.
No, right, Dave, this is what I will... So this is what I've undertaken to do. So it is a big standard change. We've got a couple of weeks to do a stakeholder review. Then it goes into workforce review, and then it will be... there's a compliance date of the 1st of July. In terms of who does what, I have said to Andy and Dean and Chris that I will quite happily brief every man on the room or woman. So I will do the briefings for you because, let's face it, I do like to talk a lot. And I don't want you to have to be in a position where you're briefing out things that you're not really sure about. So I will do those for you. It's the mechanics of arranging that that might be a bit tricksy. And I'll allow someone else to organise me because I'm not good at that. Does that help?
Yeah, that does help. And could I ask lastly, because it dare say it's going to raise its head, has the unions agreed to all of this before we start giving staff up in arms?
I'm glad you've asked this one. So where are we now with the unions? East Midlands went bad. Well, went too live too soon. Consequent discussions and problems with the RMT, and several RMT letters out saying they were in dispute with Network Rail over this. This week, there are three RMT lead reps who are page-turning this new standard. So although there is not a letter from the RMT to their members to say we will now engage with Network Rail on this topic, they have been engaging in discussions. Three of the lead reps are going through the standard, and the director of the program is very hopeful that they will soon be back to the table. What we would like, obviously, is a letter from the RMT to their members saying we're back in the game, because then everybody knows where they stand. That hasn't happened yet, but they are progressing because AJ is our lead rep that covers our route, and we know he is page turning on this standard today, so they are engaging on this topic, which is a step in the right direction.
I think it's a really good question, Dave. The other topic I'm plaguing the program director with over and above finance is what's the position with regards to the TU, because obviously what we don't want to do is implement something locally which hasn't been signed up to, either locally or nationally. But essentially what we're trying to do is make sensible preparations such that we can implement this in good time as soon as we get that agreement.
That's lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. And there's no further questions now waiting. So just a reminder, if you do wish to ask anything, it's star one, record your name and press the hash key. Thank you. Nothing further coming through at the moment.
I think in terms of wrapping up, I mean, clearly if you've got any more questions, then please feel free to push them forward. This is very much the first notification of PDSW on a wider distribution. It's going to be followed by consistent and hopefully helpful communications on the process, the sort of timelines and when it's going to affect people. So in the interim, whilst those communications will start to come out really from the beginning of November, it's just appreciate that Tracy and myself really are the leads within the route. And until we formally get things like frequently asked questions or a sort of a mailbox set up for questions that you have, feel free to get in touch with either Tracy or myself, Chris Perkins.
Thank you. Very succinct, Mr. Perkins.
Thank you. Deborah, any more questions?
Nothing further now coming through, both. Thank you.
Great. Okay.
Right, in which case, thank you very much for everybody who phoned in, and see you soon.
Tracy, Chris, thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and have a good day.